This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. But today I have two very special guests, Vinnie Eastwood of the wildly popular Vinnie Eastwood Show, and Susan Paussell, who was the program manager for Pete Santilli, who is going to be the subject of our conversation. He's proven to be a very controversial fellow. All of us have had our experiences with him, and it seems to me that there's so much rumor, speculation, controversy surrounding him that would be very worthwhile for us to spend some time dissecting the situation. Suzanne, why don't you begin by explaining your history with Pete Santilli and your ultimate judgments, but in a preliminary fashion so we can go into it in more detail later.
Oh, sure. Well, I wasn't a program director. I collaborated with him, did a Bunker news break, 15-minute, which turned into about 30-minute or so segment. I started working with him. Everything was, just fine. We collaborated on a couple of articles, and he met up with Vinnie Eastwood, and I was excited because I had watched a couple of shows of Vinnie Eastwood, and I was very impressed, and so I was telling him, I'd like to really talk to Vinnie Eastwood. And it happened that we ended up working on the Guerrilla Media together. And then I found out that Pete and Susanna had edged Vinnie out of the project. So since my husband was creating the website for Guerrilla Media Network, I told him to stop production. And I told Susanna that I didn't want to do the Bunker News Break. I didn't want to show up on the show anymore. And this was after I'd spoken to Vinnie about this. And cut all communication, all ties, told them to take down everything of, my picture and everything from their website, take it all down. This resulted in a phone call from Pete Santilli, which resulted in him screaming the C-U-N-T word at me for about 45 minutes. Susanna was crying on the phone.
Is Susanna his wife?
No, that's his girlfriend. His wife.
His girlfriend. He has a wife, too?
He has a wife. He is married. Yes.
So he's a wife and a girlfriend, and I guess his wife knows about the girlfriend?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, she does.
So it's okay with her, do we not know? Who knows?
No, I don't think it's okay. From what I've been told, it's not okay with her at all.
Give us a timeline. I mean, how long ago was it that you first encountered Pete Santilli?
It was probably about a year ago now. I stopped working with him about March or April of this year, and it was about 6 months or 8 months that I worked with him before that.
So the segment you were doing for his show was about news developments in the news?
Yes, because I'm a journalist. I would bring my articles as well as articles that I couldn't get to in the news, but I still knew about it. So it gave me a chance to broaden, because I only get to write about 4 or 5 articles a day, but I get to read, a plethora of news. So it gave me a chance to talk about things that I didn't get a chance to write about. And it became this little, at the top of the hour, the second hour, this little Bunker news break where they would get actual news, and the audience really, really liked it. And the segment kind of expanded out to about a 30 minutes. Sometimes it took up the whole second hour. But when I left, the audience was very upset. I got a lot of emails, a lot of messages on Facebook and Twitter asking me what the name of my site was again. Do I have my own radio show? What's going on with me? Because they missed my presence on the show, and it definitely had an impact on his audience when I left.
Well, I'll bet it did. I mean, you'd be a kinder, gentler personality in contrast to him, his very strident and arrogant manner. I mean, it would seem to me that you would be very much of an asset to someone of his disposition. So, and did you leave because of specific instances? Was that at all related to his interview of me?
No, Danny called me, the day that he made the decision to suspend, Pete. Pete did not get fired. He was suspended. And then, and I have the emails because Pete was sending me correspondence, that he was sending mostly everybody. And he wrote Danny back and said, well, I up your suspension and I quit. So Pete quit. He did not get fired.
He quit.
He quit. Danny suspended him for 2 weeks. He said, I take your suspension and I quit your network. So
that was...
But at American Freedom Radio, to say that you're being suspended actually means you're getting fired.
Oh, really?
No, but...
Yeah, Vinny, go ahead and add some thoughts on what Susanna has been saying here. Go right ahead.
Well, we had a conference call, I think it was the day after your interview, James, with Pete Santilli. He admitted that it was the worst interview, and, oh, man, I just got to apologize for you, to you on behalf of everybody at American Freedom Radio, Jim. That was just really, really the worst interview that has ever been done on the network. And even Pete agreed. We've got the recordings of that call, I think, maybe floating around somewhere. I'm not psychopathic, so I don't record everything verbatim, but... It seemed that he'd been very genuine. What was very interesting is that he told me everything that I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear he was never going to treat anybody like that again. I wanted to hear he wasn't going to use the network as a place to like just launch attacks at people and bring us trouble and things. And the very next day, I think, you were on Dr. Kevin Barrett's show talking about this incident, and he calls in and does the exact same freaking thing he did on his radio show that we got in trouble for in the first place. So that was just... He's talking out one side of his mouth, you know, and doing the exact opposite of what he's saying. And then I realized, oh my God, I've told him all the exclusive secrets of guerrilla media over a number of conference calls. All my ways, you know, like Batman. And now he's got them. And then he just disappears off AFR. Oh, I'm quitting. Yeah, right. You didn't quit. You didn't get suspended. He's a Marine, and he got Semper fired. That's all there is to it.
Well, from my point of view, it was certainly the most bizarre interview I ever had, and I've had a lot of them. I mean, I've probably done 1,000 interviews. I'm talking about where I am being interviewed. I've done, you know, over 660 interviews on my own shows and on other shows before that. But for me to be a guest on a show, it was really quite extraordinary. And I just adopted the rope-a-dope strategy. You know, I figured, well, I'm just going to let this guy, you know, lay it on me. And he just did over and over, but incredibly repetitiously, he kept asking me questions I'd already answered and making much about very little. And it appeared to me at the time that he was some kind of stooge for Judy Wood, who has been upset with me for simply asking John Hutchison, when I featured the two of them together, a bit about his background and education, since he's made claims for extraordinary discoveries which fall into the domain of electromagnetism among the most complex in physics. So I simply had asked John, you know, what was his background and training? He said he had flunked crayons and coloring books, which Judy thought was hilarious, but I found non-responsive. So I just, you know, went on to other topics, since it was evident to me he didn't want to address this. But I really thought it was a question I had to ask. I'd in the past interviewed Judy 15 times on my shows. I had given her 3 hours to speak at the Madison Conference, which was the first organized by Scholars for 9/11 Truth, which I founded. And I published a chapter by her in the 9/11 Conspiracy, which is the first book from Scholars. So I really found it quite extraordinary when she turned as though on a dime against me, would no longer respond to any inquiries of mine.
Judy Wood turned against me because I asked her the day after 9/11 if she was tired.
If she was tired?
Yeah.
What? That's another completely innocuous question, and she took offense at that?
Yeah. She says, I'm done, and she's never contacted me again.
I'm done. Was that on the air that you had?
No. That was just on a Skype thing. I mixed up a date or something, so she was supposed to be coming on that day rather than the day before, which was actually 9/11, which I thought I'd scheduled her for. And so she didn't show up and I had to kind of wing it. and I had a scheduled guest.
You had her scheduled for the day of 9/11, the actual day of the event?
Yeah.
What was her claim to fame that warranted your bringing her on even before she'd begun publishing or talking about 9/11?
No, not the day of 9/11. I'm not that old, man.
Oh, I mean an anniversary.
Yeah. This was earlier this year, last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
So
9/11 of 2012.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
It's the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and I wanted to give Judy a good 2 hours to come on and share her her information and her evidence and that kind of thing.
The 10th anniversary would have been 2011. Yeah. But tell me, had you previously interviewed her?
Yeah.
How many times roughly would you guess?
I think maybe I'd interviewed her once, but we'd also had a number of other calls. It was interesting. She's the most difficult person to convince that I wasn't going to set her up. It actually took me. I wanted to interview her for 2 hours, and I did. But in order to get the 2 hour interview, I had to try and convince her for 2 hours on a Skype call that I wasn't some kind of agent.
What a waste of time!
Yeah.
I would eventually, before I invited her to the Vancouver hearings, notwithstanding this estrangement where she was not responding to any of my inquiries. And in May, before the event in June of 2012, I posted a 5-star review of her book, but I explained on Amazon.com, but I explained that I felt that while her arguments were sufficient to defeat large nukes, the use of large nukes to bring about the demolition, that she really hadn't ruled out mini or micro nukes. And because of that one qualification, I was attacked over 2,000 times on Amazon.com by followers of Judy Wood, whom I believe actually include Judy Wood, using the name Emmanuel Goldstein, and Andrew Johnson using another name, over 2,000 times. Now, this is not comments on her book. This is comments on my review of her book, which was at that point a 5-star review. And after the Vancouver hearings, so much evidence was produced that substantiated what I had said, to wit that it had been done using micro or mini nukes, and that the key to it was the USGS, US Geological Survey dust samples, which were many and varied, taken over, you know, quite a period of time over many different locations, which showed all kinds of residues of a nuclear event, strontium and barium, lithium, lanthanum, uranium, thorium. I mean, it was just astonishing how many, several presenters really gave more than enough evidence to convince me and others that if you compare alternative hypotheses, such as, say, the use of nanothermite or the use of large nukes or the use of directed energy weapons, about which, by the way, she's always been extraordinarily vague, that the evidence really tends to support the use of a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, which actually, given her definition of directed energy weapons as sources of energy far greater than conventional that can be directed, actually fits these micro or mini nukes, because they're shaped charges, they can be directed, and of course they produce vastly more energy than conventional. And therefore, the hypothesis that it might have been done, for example, by taking out 1 10-floor cube per second in the case of the North Tower, where all 110 floors were standing vertical, would take 11 seconds, which just happens to correspond to NIST estimates. In the case of the South Tower, because the top 3 floors are tilting over and were taken out as 1 9 seconds. Now, that's not the only possible arrangement, but it just suggests, you know, how the evidence could converge, because what we're witnessing is so obviously not a controlled demolition in the classic sense that we see present with WTC 7, Building 7, where all the floors are coming down at the same time. There's a pile of debris equal to about 12% of the original, or about 5.5 floors. And the upper floors are not blowing apart in every direction, because, of course, a classic controlled demolition is controlled by gravity, which works in one direction only. And yet when you turn to the Twin Towers, they're blowing apart in every direction from the top down, All the floors are waiting their turn to be blown to kingdom come. And the building's being converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust. And when it's over, there's nothing left. So they're clearly destroyed by very different mechanisms. And the question becomes, how was it done? And,
Here's the problem. Firstly, we're getting off the subject of Pete Santilli. We're making it about Judy Wood.
No, we're going to come right back because I was just going to lead back to the, you know, revising my review of her to a 3-star review because of all this evidence. And yet her fans and followers added, you know, thousands more criticism. I mean, it's just absolutely stunning that if you were to go look at my review on Amazon.com, there may be by now as many as 5,000 comments on my review. And 4,000 of them are going to be critical by followers of Judy Wood. It's just stunning.
Well, it's kind of like a cult of personality that we're dealing with on a daily basis. And this has occurred to me thusly. Every single person that has the ability to have lots and lots of people listen to them has a challenge to overcome. That challenge is their own ego, and whether or not they're actually doing it for themselves or for those people that are listening. Some people forget what they're really supposed to be there for, and they stop acting like they should.
Yeah. Well, Santilli may be case in point. He seems to love the sound of his own voice, but I mean, it was a most... I bring this up in part because it was the most bizarre interview where he was attacking me.
Ooh, that reminds
for my
me.
Criticism of Judy Wood, you know, and he kept hammering me about Hurricane Erin. What about Hurricane Erin? Which I never was able to get Judy herself to explain. I mean, when she began talking about Hurricane Erin, my interpretation had been that she was suggesting it was a potential source of energy for the destruction of the Twin Towers by means of some directed energy mechanism, and she contacted me when I suggested that on the air and said, no, I was wrong, that I didn't understand her. But she would never explain to me what she meant. And so far as I can tell, Hurricane Erin had virtually nothing to do with the events of 9/11. I mean, it may have been there, and it may not have been widely reported.
The part of the interview that was most shocking for me was being recorded during the off-air breaks, right? When you go off air, okay, and the audience ain't listening, you become very different sometimes, you know, and also under FCC regulations, you don't, you usually don't swear while you're on air, but it was just this kind of, you had a very natural reaction. You kept it very professional during the on-air segments, and on the off-air segments, it's like, what the frick are you doing? And to record those off-air private conversations and to continue the interview and escalate it to a shouting match kind of thing and to record and publish that is the lowest stuff I have ever seen perpetrated by anybody in talk radio. You know, this is just sick. This is like vengeance sort of thing. Somebody's got a vendetta. And it occurred to us, and I think Suzanne, you said that Judy Wood was behind the scenes during that interview, pulling the switches and levers and dancing them around like a little puppet, wasn't she?
Suzanne Nicole told me that she does that with all of his shows. She's in a separate Skype chat. She's listening to the show, and she drops Pete a suggestion for a question or a direction for the or an admonishment, you know, direction for the conversation, or an admonishment toward the guest or the listener or whatever. It's quite disturbing that somebody would just be sitting there telling you what to say, and you'd say it.
Now,
you know, it's so,
this actually explains a bit, because my last argument with Judy Wood, before she blocked me for asking if she was tired, was what time the interview was. And instead of actually saying anything or reiterating or trying to explain further, she was merely copy-pasting again and again. She copy-pasted the exact same thing 3 times into the Skype chat, which was a confirmation for the time that we were being interviewed, right? And I struck this as very, very weird behavior kind of thing. Copy paste over and over again. It's like, hold on, I'm an adult. I know what was going on here. Let's find a solution. Let's do the recording now. But that strikes me as very similar to the way that Pete was repeating himself and asking questions that had already been answered, is that he was simply reading the various copy pastes of Judy Wood again.
Yeah, that would make
very possible.
I think so too, because there was like a series of three or four questions that he repeated about a dozen different times during the interview. I mean, it was bizarre.
Mm. And of course, after he did that, to you, Jim, not the original interview that was like, okay, this guy's on the last frickin' peg with me. There's no frickin' way I'm going to trust him if he violates anything on this. And then he does the very next day after promising profusely that he won't, and then starts up GorillaMediaNetwork.com without even telling me, okay? So he's on the network that I'm on. We're having conferences about starting Guerrilla Media and working together. And then he gets fired from the network, stops contacting me, and then starts up Guerrilla Media Network without me.
Well, it was a blatant case of plagiarism. I mean, he was taking your idea, your concept, even your image, as I recall, of a gorilla, and adopting it as
a... I never had a gorilla image.
You never had a gorilla image?
No. I mean, mine's...
But yeah, the idea of the Guerrilla Radio.
Yeah. Well, he just stole the name, Guerrilla Media. Because it's like guerrilla filmmaking, if you've ever heard of that term. It's just we make the media in the same kind of lifeblood that guerrilla filmmakers do, because, you know, you're on a tight budget, you've got tight time scales, and ain't nobody going to help you. So you've got to basically be a jack of all trades and a master of none and just get the damn job done.
Yeah.
And facilitate other people who are already... showing that they have the level of commitment required to be given a position, to be given free coverage, to be given a platform where we ask for donations on their behalf and then send them the money kind of thing.
Suzanne, just to make sure I have this clear, you're suggesting to me that Judy Wood actually was... more or less directing Santilli on a whole series of his programs, not only the one with me, but many others as well.
That's what Susanna Cole told me. So I figured she would know. They have separate Skype chats. I had access to their Skype chat. So if I was listening to the show, I would Skype to her and say, that's awesome or that's great or whatever. But she told me that this was a chat that only she and Pete and Judy Wood could see. And then eventually she was taken out of that conversation in the chat Skype, in the Skype chat. So she was up to a point watching this correspondence between the two of them where Judy Wood would suggest something or say something for him to say, and then he would say it on the air, or he would make that suggestion on the air, or he would... turn the direction that she was giving him in the Skype chat toward the guest or the caller or whatever was going on in the show. That's very disturbing to me.
Yeah, well, it's quite fascinating. I mean, I got to know Judy, over the years I was featuring her on my show because I thought her work was so important and that it deserved publicity so that others could study it. Where I would take the listeners to her website. She didn't have the book then, but I was pioneering an interaction between the computer and radio so that we'd go actually to websites and look at images and diagrams and maps and all this sort of thing and talk about them on the air where everyone would know, they could see what we were talking about. But, I learned that she had a certain mindset that verged on paranoia, and I think that's something that has spilled over here. We have to take our first break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my special guests, Suzanne Paussell and Vinnie Eastwood, and we're talking about the Pete Santilli phenomenon. We'll be right back. Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, continuing my conversation with Suzanne Paussell and Vinnie Eastwood. Suzanne, did you ever get that inkling about Judy? I mean, Vinnie obviously went through it. He had to deal 2 hours with Judy just to convince her that he was on the upright and wanted to interviewer in a legitimate, straightforward way rather than to undermine her. But she has a way of looking at the world that is very seductive. She'll always say, well, why did he do this? Or why did he say this? Why didn't he do this? Why didn't he?
The amount of conversations.
I've never seen such an elaborately paranoid mind in my life.
Yeah, and that's the reason why she doesn't have many long-lasting relationships, is because people just don't put up with that kind of BS, you know? It's like if you're married to somebody and your wife keeps accusing you of cheating on her when you're not, sometimes you start thinking about cheating, don't you?
You're paying the price for it anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, what's the point of suffering if I don't get to stick my... If I don't get to stick my McNuggets and some sweet and sour sauce in it every once in a while.
Judy's a very strange personality. Suzanne, did you ever have much direct interaction with Judy so you formed your own impressions of her as
well? Yeah, I spoke to her twice on the phone. She emailed me and she wanted me twice
on the phone. See, I spoke with her hundreds of times.
Well, the two times that I spoke to her was very interesting. She started emailing me. Telling me that she wanted me to write an article about this specific thing. And it happened to be in a interview that Piers Morgan did with Jesse Ventura. So I found the YouTube video and I sent it to her and I said, you know, Jesse Ventura said it best. I can't do anything better than what Jesse did. And this YouTube video is already out. It's been seen by this many people. We should just promote this. I don't want to waste my time writing this article. And she didn't like that. So, you know, nobody tells me what to write about. If somebody suggests something to me and I look into it and I'm like, yeah, that's worth writing about, I will. But I don't take kindly to, like, being told, you need to write about this. You should write about this. That this is what you should be writing about. Yeah. The two times that I spoke to her, they wanted me to write a hit piece on Gordon Duff.
Really?
Yeah. And
what was the objective of that? Why attack Gordon?
To discredit Veterans Today and Gordon Duff.
And was there a deeper reason for what does Veterans Today represent they didn't like? I mean, notwithstanding that I'm publishing all this stuff on there, was this after I began to publish stuff about the use of mini nukes and all that?
Well, I was on YouTube watching stuff like I periodically do, and I stumbled upon a video, an interview with Gordon Duff. I don't remember when it was taken, and I don't remember who was interviewing him. I think it was Sam Harris. And Gordon Duff said 40% of what's published on Veterans Today is a lie, because if he told the truth, he would be killed.
Yeah, I think what he really meant was, see, Gordon has very deep intel connections. He was even being considered for director of the Central Intelligence at one point. And he can't talk about everything he knows. I mean, that would be something he could not do without, you know, severe ramifications. So, I mean, I take it he's talking about more withholding information than he is, you know, misleading, although, of course, by withholding, you're not giving the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You're giving part of the truth. I don't know that I'm aware of a case where he deliberately misrepresented anything where I could say, yes, he did, that it was he made false claims there. I don't know that. But I'm not aware of that either. Yeah, but I do have reason to believe that he's very often withheld information where he knows better but can't say all he knows.
Well, I'm an Air Force brat. I just had a conversation with my dad 2 days ago about a secret mission that he was on that he was only allowed to talk about 2 years ago because it was just declassified. So, I totally get that. This video became the center of this conversation with Susanna and Pete and Judy Wood. They wanted me to write this article. And I said, I have no reason to write this article. I don't want to write this article. I'm not going to write this. If you want to write the article, you go ahead. But I don't want to write this article.
Where would you have published the article had you written it?
Well, I have a website, OccupyCorporatism.com.
Okay, so that's where they wanted you to publish it, on OccupyCorporatism.com.
Yeah, because that's my website. It's one of the most popular alternatives.
See, they must have liked your standing. In other words, Yeah, if you were saying this about Gordon Duff, people are going to take it more seriously than if they say it about Gordon Duff.
Well, yes, the thing about Pete is
that's why I said I wasn't going to write the article, because I'm not My job is to expose corruption. My job is not to defame people and ruin careers.
Not to axe personalities.
Yeah. Yes. Pete seems to have a knack for finding really good ideas, really talented people, and stealing and or exploiting them. That's it.
Yeah.
That's his entire career path. You trace him back. We've got all the documents to prove it. He's been scamming people for a long freaking time. And it's not showing any signs of stopping. If anything, it shows signs of accelerating. And at this point, Suzanne, you told me something very disturbing the other day. Didn't you say that he was asking people to storm the White House and take them out?
Yes, on his show. You know, the whole debacle with him and the donations. And so he gets back on his show after the trucker shutdown and everything. And he starts telling his audience, and I have this downloaded, that he wants them to take guns, go to Pennsylvania Avenue, demand that everyone vacate the premises, and he will not be satisfied until he takes Judy Wood hand in hand and walks into the White House.
Takes Judy Wood hand in hand and walks into the White House, what, declaring that they're the king and queen?
I know! It was bizarre.
You know what song popped into my head right then? We're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. I can just imagine Pete and Judy holding hands and skipping into the White House singing.
Well, does it have? Is there a mutual adulation aspect to this? I mean, do they both somehow, are they both infatuated with one another?
Oh, I don't know. He's got a relationship with Susanna Cole. That I know about, but I don't know.
I
know he respects her and admires her.
Did you read the article by Gordon by Stu Webb while it was up?
Yeah,
and, I mean I just read it before we came on the air together, and there's some pretty weird stuff in there. I mean, Stu is reporting that in May of this year, Santilli attempted to gain notoriety for stating, and I'm quoting now from the article, Hillary Clinton needs to be convicted. She needs to be tried, convicted, and shot in the vagina. I want to pull the trigger. The full quote.
Oh, is that my article?
The full quote from the Pete Santilli show is, I want to shoot her right in the vagina, and I don't want her to die right away. I want her to feel the pain. I want to look her in the eyes, and I want to say, on behalf of all Americans that you've killed, on behalf of the Navy SEALs, the family of Navy SEAL Team 6, who were involved in the false hunt down of this Obama bin Laden thing, that whole fake scenario, because these Navy SEALs know the truth. They killed them all. On behalf of all those people, I'm supporting our troops by saying we need to try, convict, and shoot Hillary Clinton in the vagina. That is bizarre.
And we have a recording just given to us a day or two ago by an anonymous source of a, I think it might be an off-the-air background recording, where he says that he has over 600 fake Twitter accounts, that he is the world's most prolific Twitter spammer, that you have to skullfrack, I'm paraphrasing for the radio audience, you have to skullfrack the customer in order to trick them into coming to your website. Okay? And much, 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 much worse. I haven't even listened to the full recording.
This is pretty bizarre. I mean, he's talking about hitting people over the head with a hammer, as it were. I mean, that's what he's talking about, fracturing their skulls.
No. You know how you skull...
Verbally, of course.
No. Mentally, skull frack somebody, you know? Just trick them, deceive them. It's like when you're listening to this recording, you're like, oh, my God, he's actually saying this. And he's got this whole group of cronies around him. And that's the thing about psychopaths as well, is that they need an entourage. They need an audience. They've always got these little protoplasm kind of sacks of scum that hang around them, kind of thing, that don't have any mind of their own, and are simply enjoy playing the victim, I think. And they're often just as vicious, just as nasty, just as dark and cold and heartless as the psychopath themselves. But they've barely got anything going for them, and they have to attach themselves to somebody else. Whereas Pete, being a real primo psycho, I've not seen psychopathy of this caliber in my life before. One came close a number of years ago. This kind of pedophile sort of gang member sort of dude who was pretending to be an activist kind of thing so that he could hire other activists and get them to work for him for free, you know, setting up his businesses and that kind of thing. And it just like reminded me exactly of that. This is what's happened. He's come into alternative talk radio because he knows, just like every psychopath knows, that he wants power and control. Talk radio is a great place if that's what you're seeking, because you get to lie to people constantly over the airwaves, and you get to convince them that anybody else who talks disparaging against you is a child molesting pedophile. That's what he's called me. I've got the screenshots. Vinny Eastwood is a child molester. Another Twitter one here. Anybody who is criticizing the Pete Santilli show is either a child molester or is practicing incest. 99% of them do. Right? An insane quote. Then,
isn't that bizarre?
Yeah, I mean, in the meantime, he was stealing my company, you know? My company name, my company concept, all of that kind of stuff. So I was like, you know what? Frack this guy. Let's do it. Let's expose him. And so we wrote up a legal document. We sent it on to him, explaining all of the things that he'd done wrong, showing how many of the 20 guerrilla media principles, which he even helped come up with to a certain degree. I think he'd violated something like 16 out of the 20 in as little as 2-3 days. You know? And these are just basic, simple principles that instill journalistic credibility, honesty, and integrity. Right? And if he can violate that many principles of honesty and integrity and credibility, then you have none of the above. Do you? This is why he has no qualms about telling outrageous, outrageous, outlandish, unsubstantiated lies about everybody for any reason. This is the reason why he has no scruples about threatening violence against anybody, even a spinally injured veteran living in Australia. He says, "I will knock your teeth out."
It's very, very
man
strange.
In a wheelchair, you know.
Were you aware that Santilli had made these remarks that Stu Webb was attributing to him back in May about Hillary and all that? I mean, had you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, this whole incident with Pete and me and him taking the company happened in January, mate. All right, I've been trying to expose him since then. I mean, here's the other thing. I feel real guilty, Jim, because I've had the opportunity to be ranting and raving and attacking and exposing Pete Santilli all this time since January, and I've tried to stay under the radar, tried to keep out of it, you know, let him steal Guerrilla Media from me. Just go ahead, you know, I'll make a better Guerrilla Media. And I don't really even have time to make a better Guerrilla Media because I'm doing my radio show and all of this other kind of stuff. And I realize, you know what, he's really going to, every single time that he's on his radio broadcast and he says, "We're broadcasting live on the Guerrilla Media Network," that just grates on me so much. It's like somebody's stolen your child and then turned them into a beauty queen and then marches them out in front of the audience every single day and says, "This is my child, nobody else's. It's my child. I did all the work. I did all the grooming. I did everything."
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
And to sit there and know that it's your child and that they stole her from you and that you can never get her back, because they're violent thugs who will defame and destroy your entire life and existence if you try. That was the thing that was keeping me back from exposing him, was the fear of what he could do. And he can do anything. All right? Imagine somebody who is unafraid to threaten somebody in a wheelchair. Imagine what a person like that is capable of. Now, since the truckers, since a Facebook profile that had over 200,000 likes was hijacked by Pete Santilli, and the Twitter profiles too, and all the people on the inside, the organizers, the people taking the donations, the truckers themselves, all being taken in by Pete and just whoomph, just completely and utterly screwed over. Goodness knows how much donations were taken. And now we hear Ben Swan was asking for donations as well. And Pete Santilli started raising donations for him and then stole them off him as well. These are just preliminary reports, but it fits the profile, doesn't it? This is what he does. If you are involved, and I'll talk to the listeners now, if you listen to Pete Santilli, stop listening to him, stop giving him clicks. If you have been a guest on the Pete Santilli show, stop replying to his emails, stop coming on his broadcast, because the only reason why he wants you to listen to him is so he can feed you lies. The only reason why he wants you on his radio broadcast is so he can take something from you. There is no possibility of a positive and good relationship with this man. You have a look. Just Google Pete Santilli exposed or anything of that nature, and you will see a litany of videos of people that he has messed around. Almost everybody that has ever worked for him has come out against him after the fact, okay? There's a reason for that. It's because he treats everybody the same, and that is awfully. So good people with a conscience who don't want him to continue hurting, abusing, manipulating people are standing up. And that's why we started the Pete Santilli Victims Coalition, so that people can actually stand up against this monstrous tyrant of a man and bring him down. Because if we've got a talk radio show host who is now coming on to mainstream coverage, he's been in the Huffington Post, he is a skilled manipulator, and in the media, that's usually all you need. Isn't it? In order to rise all the way to the top, as you can defame anybody who speaks badly about you. You can threaten anybody who doesn't take your intimidation lying down. And you can directly sabotage and hack people who actually try and fight against you. He's got all of these defense mechanisms, an army of trolls. An army so dark, it's almost like marching into Mordor with the orcs and the gremlins and the goblins, where the very air you breathe is a poisonous fume. They're toxic, parasitical people that have no interest in truth, honor, respect, dignity, or their fellow man. They're strictly in it for their own enjoyment. They enjoy telling lies about us. They enjoy it. They laugh about it. They know that they don't care. They actually know that they're the bad guy, and they enjoy it.
Fascinating, Vinny. Fascinating. There's actually a Pete Santilli victims organization or group? I mean, tell me about that.
Well, I started that after the truckers had all their donations allegedly defrauded by Pete Santilli. We don't have evidence to substantiate that, how much money he stole, or even any evidence to substantiate that he even stole money at all. We do have a lot of very suspicious circumstances which are very suggestive that he did. So with that, as soon as I found out that he derailed the entire truckers ride for the Constitution, and took over all of their broadcasting stuff and sandwiched his way in there. He always goes in and takes control of organizations by basically lying and intimidating his way in there, and then intimidating and lying his way into taking control completely. And this is what he did to all of those people. And then I saw this, and I was like, oh my God, we now have a really good opportunity, because he is committed such scumbaggery and effed off so many people from what he's done here, and he'll try and spin it his way. And I was not prepared to sit back and see the truckers of America go down because people were unskilled or unable or didn't have the media platform in order to get the truth out about this incident. So Suzanne Posel and I started calling up these people who were criticizing Santilli on Twitter, the people who were some of the organizers and people who were in deep with the trucker protest. We interviewed them, put them up on YouTube. They've now got thousands upon thousands of hits. And we're starting to expose the truth about them. And it occurred to me that as soon as we started doing that, other people were starting to come out and ask us to interview them about what Pete Santilli had done. Other people were inviting us on radio shows to talk about Pete Santilli, because this had really started to spiral out of control. It was starting to get really big. It was supposed to be a covert operation to infiltrate, sabotage a movement called the Trucker Protest, and then get away scot-free with the money and derail the movement so that people would lose interest in rising up. But it backfired really massively because he got exposed by us and the people at the top of the trucker movement. It's been really bad for him, so bad, in fact, that his facts was taken off his hard drive to the FBI. This is to the best of our knowledge, this fax is a genuine article. We still have another screenshot of the sent and received messages from Pete Santilli's desktop of his computer, which we're still waiting to have verified as well, but that also appears genuine. That he's literally faxing the FBI, mentions his handler, who is one of the top-ranking FBI, who is the head of the San Diego field office, I think, and was also the head of a cyber terrorism task force. And Peter's saying that you said that this would not happen, that I would be protected. Where is my protection? You know, this kind of thing. And the video's up there online, ladies and gentlemen. You can search Pete Santilli, FBI informant. You should be able to see the video where we read through the facts and also try and vet the document while we're going through it with a number of searches we did to verify the phone number and verify the identity of the FBI handler that he mentioned. So, knowing that, Pete Santilli actually is an FBI informant, right? Now, have a look at his behavior. Now have a look at how he's been treating people. Now have a look at the ideas that he's been stealing. Now have a look at the movements that he's been subverting. Now have a look at how many times he has threatened and intimidated people, breached some intellectual property, and no legal consequences whatsoever. The guy's practically frickin' untouchable. Some of the truckers, I think Tom Lakarova, I think his name is, has called the DC police on him. And the DC police appear very interested. And in fact, this has happened a number of times where...
Vinny, hold that thought. We're going to take our second break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. My special guest today, Vinny Eastwood and Suzanne Posel, were talking about this fellow named Pete Santilli and trying to make heads or tails of what's going on with him. We'll be right back.